Hi, this is Mark Talbot. I post a Zolt in a 20-foot radius.
Hi, this is Derek Myers. I post as Amaron at dungeonsmaster.com, and welcome to our podcast, Recounting Encounters.
A show where we talk about what happened at D&D Encounters this week. Everyone, and welcome to a special episode of Recounting Encounters. And tonight we welcome, once again, Eric Scott DeBee, this season's author of D&D Encounters, Season 13, Storm Over Neverwinter, and he comes to speak to us today about the finale, and the good, the bad, the ugly. And Eric, please tell us a little bit about yourself. I made the serious mistake last time of not letting you introduce yourself, so go ahead and plug away.
Well, I'm Eric Scott DeBee. I wrote this encounter season 13, Storm Over Neverwinter. I also wrote the previous pseudo prequel, season 6, Lost Crown of Neverwinter, and they kind of connect, so you could take characters from one and they lead into the other, if your DM went for that. I'm a writer, author, game designer. I'm writing a comic book. I do a lot of things. And I'm best known for my work in the Forgotten Realms. My fifth novel, Shadowbane Eye of Justice, came out at the end of last year. You can find basically all the information about me that you'd like on ericscottdeby.com, which is my website. And that's it. Let's get into it.
Sounds good. Joining us tonight is Craig and Derek again. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Greetings, greetings.
Greetings and salutations, all. All right. I know, Derek, you had a question that you just wanted to delve right into right away.
Well, more of a general kind of question. So now that we've completed the encounter, completed the full season, we just ran the final encounter this evening. I'm really curious as to the creative process, specifically around the final encounter. Like, I know when I was reading it, it really, everything seemed to lead to this big thrilling climatic conclusion. And there's just so much going on. And I'd really like to just hear you talk about how you came up with it and maybe if you had any outside influences or if any of the Wizards editors might have thrown stuff at you or maybe even they pulled you back because you wanted to do even more stuff.
Well, basically, the primary guidance that Wizards gave me with developing the concept of the season, as I think I mentioned last time, was we want a storm. And I said, yeah, I could do that. And with me, I'm a fiction writer. So when I put in an element, I milk it for all it's worth. I make that thematic and symbolic. And throughout this encounter season, the storm builds and it echoes the tension that's going on in the sessions. It builds up through about session 4, and then it kind of slackens off a little bit because that's the first, you know, big boom climactic moment, and then it's rising again until you get this last climax of the storm bypassing what normal humans would see in a storm and just becoming this utter cacophony of crazy that's going all around the final session. And I like to have the weather be significant, but often it's just kind of taken as a background thing. Like it's raining in the background, or it's cold, or it's dark. And I decided that I wanted to bring the storm in and have it be a very immediate, very important aspect of the encounter. So that's why you have the very ridiculous, shall we say, terrain
in a good
effects.
Way.
Oh yeah, of the storm bubble surrounding the adventurers. So yeah, I had this great vision, and in my original design for the top of the building and the storm all around it, the actual ground surface was much smaller. I think it was like 5x5 that the players would have to navigate, and all the villains were flying around, and the heroes could just stay in one place and just keep fighting them. But it kind of encouraged them to jump off and ride the storm and try and fly themselves. And that's kind of a thing that most PCs are probably not going to be able to do for a while. And this gives them a chance to try out flying even at low levels. So, and I just thought it was visually awesome. So that was my thought process that went into it.
Well, it was a resounding success at one of the tables that I was running. Every time the players discovered one of the new aspects that was going on the board, there was this gasps and gasps of awe as their eyes, you know, expanded, and they were like, oh my God, we can do this. And everything just seemed better than the thing that came before it. And yeah, it was crazy. And they all kept saying in their minds, they pictured it just like a video game. And I was like, hey, if that works for you, go with it. But yeah, no, everyone loved it. It worked really well at my table.
Yeah, there is a little bit of that. I've been playing more video games than I used to because, I don't know, it just kind of naturally ended up that way. And I thought, well, you know, this is basically a climactic boss fight. I want it to feel like a climactic boss fight. And so it has cool new rules, and the way you fight is probably different. Although, you know, it's still and still be very successful in the battle. I'm very curious to see how it ran at different tables. I know there are several tables that I heard about online where people just, oh my God, must stay on this roof at all costs. And part of the fun really is falling off the roof and seeing that you don't actually die. You just, it becomes more cool.
I know with my group, it was, I actually had a chance to do the encounter twice. The first time as a player, I felt that the DM didn't prompt us enough, like short of coming out and saying, hey guys, you can do this. None of the players picked up on the subtleties of what could happen. So when I ran the encounter the second time through, I made a bigger point of emphasizing, without coming right out and saying you can do this, of giving them the opportunity to make skill checks to identify certain unusual elements. And that worked really well. And that way the players felt like they were discovering these things without just the DM reading off the page saying, okay, you can do X, you can do Y, you can do Z. And it worked really well at my table. How about you guys? Did you, Mark, Craig, did you guys have much success with the elements?
The elements, no. I did have a lot of success with my gargoyles, like I was telling Eric and Craig earlier. They were kept very occupied with the gargoyles, but I used...
Sorry, wait, are we playing the same encounter? I don't remember gargoyles in there.
No, remember Chartilifax? Chartilifax died
and we spoke... I remember because we talked about it outside of this podcast, but anybody listening is going to be lost.
Yeah, okay, true. All right, Chartilifax in Session 6 for me was killed. So I was brainstorming with Craig and Derek, and we were trying to come up with ideas, you know, to kind of make it a little bit better. I didn't want to bring Chartilifax back. I know he's a big part of the whole Neverwinter campaign. But regardless, I said, you know what? Let's not bring a dragon back. So I said, why don't I just invent some gargoyles that when inmates that don't have the proper password go up on the roof and get towards the, what do you call that, the crenelling? Crenelling around it? Anyway, the area where you can jump off the roof, that the gargoyles react, and they're kind of like suicide bots. And it prevents you from committing suicide, per se. But any character that actually went adjacent to the wall or to the roof, the rooftop itself, the gargoyles attacked and threw down the stairs. So they were really, really busy trying to take care of those gargoyles and trying to avoid them, and they caught on, and I gave enough prompting for them to know that if you stood by the edge, then the gargoyles will attack you. If you didn't, well, then they won't attack you. And they figured that out after like 4 or 5 rounds, but it was, overall, it was really cool. Vargas kind of went down to 10% hit points in the first round, so I ported him out of there for 2 rounds so he can take a couple of potions of healing, hint hint, quote quote, and he came back up and we did another 3 or 4 rounds of fighting, and he just got smoked while he was invisible. It was pretty dramatic and it was pretty epic, so it was a lot of fun that way, but we did not take advantage of the elements per se. But on the other hand, is I did take the elements into consideration, saying you're in a very quiet bubble right now, and everything is just howling outside. So you see cows flying by, like in Twister, and all that kind of stuff, and you see things flying around. And I took a lot of advantage of the fact that the storm kept building and building and building. So I did the whole rumbling thing. I did, like I said, gave the description of the elementals, like lightning was striking through the arrow slits and it was passing through all the elementals. And I was using the storm to create mood and setting in the game. So I did take advantage of that part of the storm, but I didn't take advantage of the powers per se.
Cool. But, and now you were doing D&D Next, right? Did you find that limited your options at all, or just
it? Not at all. It just enhanced it. Yeah. I was able to just create off the top of my head without having to look through monster powers and figure out what's similar or what's not. And, you know, it was pretty interesting. It was fun.
Greg, what about your group? Did they use any of the flying jumps or the control lightning or anything?
No, they were too scared to do it. I kept trying to work it up about, you know, you see these powerful updrafts coming up from the side of each side of the building. And I tried to give up or give more of the, like, you think there's ways that you might be able to manipulate this. And but no one was too interested in doing that. They were very much wanting to sort of huddle together, and then there was a lot more of a focus on, well, let's take these guys down first. Let's focus our fire here. Let's focus our fire there. So they weren't so focused on trying to navigate around and try different things like that. I tried to lay it out there, but they weren't biting.
Nice.
That's unfortunate.
What else have you heard, Eric? Have you heard anything? Like, on you were talking about how some people are using it, some people not. I mean, apart from the oh my god, stay away from the roof type thing.
I read on the boards about one DM who really liked it. Like, she was like, I really want the PCs to do this, but they're trying really hard not to fall off the roof, because it's kind of a DM style thing. Some DMs just kind of tell you basically what's going on with the terrain. Some DMs just let you find out as you progress. And either way is perfectly understandable. It depends on your table and how quickly your players pick up on things. But this particular DM, I think, was like, well, I'm not going to tell players anything. They're just going to have to see. And unless you kind of clue players in, give them little hints, like maybe a piece of the rooftop breaks off, falls into the storm, and then immediately sweeps back up and sails back onto the roof, something like that, then PCs are going to look at that and say, oh God, there's instant death. Because I am at least 80 or 100 feet in the air, and if I fall, I'm only a, you know, fourth or fifth or sixth level character, I'm going to die. So it's kind of nice to if you want to keep the characters on the edge of their seats and let them figure it out belatedly in the encounter, somebody could, you know, fall and then be swept up, and then they go, oh, hey. But if you wait too long, then it's unlikely that they're going to use something like that. So it's all just a matter of kind of reading your table and determining what they're going to need to know in order to make the encounter more fun. If it's really fun because they don't want to fall off the edges, great. If it's really fun because they're riding the storm and, you know, doing the superhero thing of clashing into the people above, that's totally cool too. So I liked your guys' stories. Those were great. And the gargoyles thing is very neat.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that's really cool. I wish I had thought of that. I was designing the campaign setting, I wish I had thought of that.
It made sense when we looked at the map. Like, when we were helping Mark brainstorm ideas, we threw five or six ideas out there, and they all sounded kind of lame. And then I think somebody said, why don't we look at the map and see? And then I think it was Mark who said, you know, if these statues could animate, that could really be something. And someone went, what if they were gargoyles? And all of a sudden it was like, oh my God, now we know what we can do.
Yeah.
I was kind of upset that my guys hadn't killed Churchill effects. And I thought about using the gargoyles, but I don't know. I got a soft spot for dragons, so I brought them back.
Yeah, I called it the Helm's Angel Construct.
That's neat.
Cool. You see, you could have had the Chertel effects and the gargoyle. Make it a little extra hard. So you guys are all vets. You can handle this, right?
No. This is my home group. I absolutely would have. But at a public play event, no, I don't. We had a TPK last week. I wasn't going to throw that at them for the finale.
Sure, yeah.
So we talked last time about that I had written a lot of, like, ending stuff. Like, what happens to characters after the campaign's over. What happened to key NPCs in your guys' games?
I had to change all of my endings because I had a TPK.
Oh.
Yeah, mine did not end so great. But it was still a lot of fun. Regardless, it was a pretty long drawn-out fight, but they did end up, unfortunately, losing it. So you know, the way I handled that was, because, I mean, of course, they're like, well, what happens? You know, like, no, nothing. You're all dead, so you don't know. But what I had happen was that basically Lord Neverember had sent additional guards because of the intensifying storm. So basically, after they're destroyed, they were able to take down Vargas, and they were able to. They didn't take out Chartilifax. They were very close to having him gone, but they fell before then. But basically, you know, another force came in. But I basically had Helm's Hold destroyed, and unfortunately, Lady Nidris's son was a victim in that.
Not Zan! No. No, no.
Indeed, Zan did not make it out, nor did what was her name? The villain.
Rohini?
No,
villain from last season.
Yeah, the villain from last season. Seldra? Oh.
Seldra.
Yeah, that's it. She was also a casualty in this tragic accident. But
poor Seldra killed twice.
The Prophet Rohini, of course, which is something I want to come back to later, by the way. The Prophet Rohini was able to make her way. And actually, because of something we'll discuss later, I was able to sort of weave a bit of her story into her salvation, into how she survived. And as well, I can't remember his name. Brother, was it
Sitarin?
Sitarin, yes. I had him survive. Lady Nidris was beside herself with grief, of course, because of her son. So she decided to pack up and leave Neverwinter. Neverwinter was spared a lot of the destruction that befell Helm's Hold, but they all got together and decided to rebuild, or to come together as a group and help rebuild Helm's Hold, to keep it as this bastion of safety in, you know, the edge of Neverwinter Woods. And then, of course, they had the statues built of each of the PCs that valiantly gave their lives to delay Kyrus long enough that that additional forces were able to arrive and eventually put an end to this horrible storm.
See, that's a great story. I like that resolution.
Yeah.
So now that the tower is destroyed, do they find all the creepy, scary stuff underneath?
Well, this is where it comes. Prophet Rohini was in charge of leading this this rebuilding of the cathedral. So I didn't really get into those details with them, but I did make sure to mention that she's very adamant about taking control of the rebuilding of the tower, and had a very select few group who could help with certain areas, and it was all because of, you know, memory of a helm and things like that. And so it was pretty interesting.
So it won't be Helm's Hold anymore. It's going to be Helm's Hell.
Yeah, pretty much.
Helm's Delve.
Yeah, seriously.
With my group, it was, unfortunately, in the interest of time, once they sort of defeated the encounter, we didn't really have a lot of time to go into the specifics. But one interesting thing they did during the encounter was we had a player who had been previously with another table come over to our group because we were short a couple of bodies, and she brought in a bard, and her diplomacy was insanely high. And at one point, the dragon Chartilifax was just laying it into the party. Like, it was very clear they were not going to survive this unless something drastic happened. So she decided to try and talk to the dragon. She says, "Is there any reason I can't try and reason with them?" And she had not been at our table previously. So I was like, "Yeah, sure, go for it." So she used a power plus her diplomacy. I think she was rolling on like a 25 before the dice even hit the table. It was a plus 25. And she rolled like an 18 or a 19. Like, it was obscene how high this diplomacy check was. And she spoke Draconic, so I gave her an additional bonus. So she basically convinced the dragon. She's like, look at what's happening here. The sorceress is using the lightning to cleanse her madness. And I had given her a check earlier where she had noticed something that looked like a spell scar on Chartilifax. I wasn't sure if he actually had some sort of visual marking on him or not. I couldn't remember the description, but I'm like, yeah, maybe that's why he was here in the first place before he got all corrupted. And so she's trying to reason with him and saying, like, she has come here to free herself of this spell plague, spell scar, curse, what have you, and the storm is able to do that. Let her finish her thing. Let us help her finish her thing, and when it's all done, we will help you. And the dragon basically figured, yeah, sure, why not? And then she made a second diplomacy check, which was even higher than the first one. She's like, hey, by the way, on your way out, you think you could breathe poison on them? And so he's like, yeah, sure, why not? So the dragon ended up helping them a little bit towards the end of the fight. And then after everything was said and done, they tried to find Chartilifax to actually come, you know, make good on their promise. But once the storm dissipated, the Prophet Rohini, behind the scenes, not that the party knew this, had basically summoned Tertilifax to come to her, and the two of them had taken off for fear of being exposed. And so that was, they were like, well, after we collect our reward, we're going to go hunt them down and try and make good on our promise to the dragon. So that was sort of how the party had left things.
That's pretty neat, too.
Mine sounds boring in comparison, huh? Holy crow. No, I, long and short, Vargas got killed. Kerris came to her senses, but instead of just being like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to help rebuild Helm's Hold, blah, 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 she asked the party to help run a quest to actually resurrect Vargas. I mean, I know it's not to raise him from the dead, to try and put him back to his good ways, how he was beforehand, to absolve him of the Ashmadai symbol and all that jazz. That was pretty much as far as we took it. Nothing happened with Rohini. And once again, it was the interest of time, right? We were creating our third level characters for next week and everything. So... yeah, that's pretty straightforward.
That works too.
Cool.
Yeah. Good job, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I think, Eric, you had mentioned this the last time we spoke to you. One of the things that I liked about the way the adventure was set up is there was a lot of stuff going on with a lot of NPCs. And if for a group that is coming to the Encounters program brand new, who... hopefully, after this encounter season, we'll decide to move on in a home game, possibly even with these same characters. This certainly provided a lot of threads that were not resolved. It provided some rich backstory in, you know, the fantastic setting of Neverwinter. If you've got the campaign setting, there's tons of stuff that you can build on in there, including the pieces related to Helm's Hold. So I really liked how, although we had a conclusion to the story, there was still a lot left unresolved, enough that a home group would have no problem picking this up and, you know, as the three of us discovered, going in three completely different directions depending on how things played out.
That was totally the idea. I mean, it's like writing a novel in a series. You know, this is book two of the Neverwinter series.
Right.
And it's a choose your own adventure book, obviously. And the next one is, we'll see what that's all about. I don't know.
D&D Encounters.
I don't know if they're even going to do that. I hope they are, because it's a great opportunity, and obviously the setting is great, and this has been pretty successful. So
I think
like the directions you guys took your tables. I guess I'll have to figure out the canonical ending for this, if there's going to be another one.
Yeah, that's a good point.
This one will be... level 12 characters against Rohini. No, I don't think so. Level 12 at Encounters? Yeah, right.
Wishful thinking, my friend.
Well, maybe D&D Next will allow that to happen. True. I don't know. Nice. How complicated are characters at level 12? They can't possibly be as complicated as 4th edition 12th level characters are.
It reminds me very much of 2nd edition, almost. How the characters just had their... you know, this is what they could do, and that's it. There's not a whole heck of a lot of pluses, minuses, not a lot of features, feats, nothing to really stack. It's really quite simple, as Mike Merles put it. He says he wanted to simplify the new edition, and he has. He's really streamlined it. Well, I'm happy with it anyway. There's a few nitpicks that I have, but apart from that, I'm happy with it so far.
Well, good.
The scaling is really good, and it really lends itself nicely to a party where everybody is different levels, or some of the characters are higher or lower than the others. It's not like 4th edition, where as soon as someone's one or two levels different, there's a huge gap. Yeah. I've found with my limited experience with Next so far is it really, really works well with that, you know, is the party 6th level or 8th level or 10th level? You know, at the end of the day, it's really not going to change things that much.
And they've been going for flat math for the level progression, pretty much. Is that right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Every third level or something, they gain a +1 to their attack bonus.
Right.
Spell save DC, all that kind of stuff. But really, it's pretty flat. I mean, like Derek says, you can be 2 or 3 levels apart and still have an impact in the party.
Yeah, I like that. Well, one thing I really liked about this season, though, and as we've talked about a couple times already, is the Prophet Rohini. Because when I was preparing for that first session, when she appears, when the torment, just the one after the Tormentor, I believe his true identity is revealed as Vargas. was going, you know, as I was prepping for it, I was like, who is this Prophet Rohini? I don't know anything about her. Flipped open the Neverwinter book, and here's this huge backstory. Having not read the Aaron Evans book, because I believe someone said that she appears.
Brimstone Angels.
Yeah, that's right. Having not read that, I wasn't really sure anything about this character. So looking through the Neverwinter book, it was just huge, completely unexpected for me anyway, backstory. So I was like, wow, there's so much I can do with this now. You know what I mean? Because we're coming in and I'm saying, here's the Prophet Rohini, but I don't know who this is. But now I do know who this is. And now I have a context to sort of present her. So when the PCs are wondering who's this character, I have a better way that I can present her now. And I just thought it was really great that there's this huge other story, but it really didn't have anything to do with the main story here. That was just, it happened to be like sort of two storylines that happened to cross paths. And awesome. The fact that she has the key to the crypt on her, that was great. So it was nice to see all this stuff in there. And I don't know. I wish it would be more of a common thing, I guess.
It reminded me a little bit of some of the older classic adventures, even some of the ones that Gygax wrote, where there's a lot of little details in there that the players would never, ever discover. And it's clearly a wink, wink to the DM that, hey, sure, you're putting in all this work, I'm going to give you a little something. Here, you know, you find a letter in there to the guy's daughter, and which they talk about this, which is really what's going on. And like the players, even if they find it, are never gonna have any idea what the significance of this is. And it's
right.
I like that we had a few of those little details where it's the wink wink, here's something for you, and if you've done your homework, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And there was the relationship between Rohini and Chartilifax, and just how that plays out for the character, because it got all the players interested, you know, when the DM plays up these interactions and like just the way she talks. So, you know, you have the part where she's giving these prophecies, but now there's like a deeper meaning behind a lot of them, right? So it's good.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the strengths of having a really well-developed shared world setting like this,
right,
is that there are so many characters and so many stories. And as we were discussing last time, I like to put in those story threads and hooks and stuff that you as a DM can pick up and run with if you want to. And you can, you know, just kind of roll with it if you don't. Right. That's totally fine.
Right.
But yeah, I think that's a real strength in the Encounters adventures or in any published adventures, to just kind of bring in those characters and involve them in a way that isn't central to the plot unless the DM wants it to be.
Yeah.
So, Eric, I have a quick question. You mentioned on the forums about all these hidden Easter eggs. Now, how many did you actually put in there?
Oh, God, I lose track.
Okay, so there's plenty of them. I was going to say, well, can you mention most of them? But that would probably take like a couple hours, I guess, right?
Well, I don't know. I can mention a couple.
I know you've got Kaelin and Mirren.
Got Kaelin and Mirren show up at the very beginning, are there for just a little bit, and then run away.
Which
and
is
then
typical.
Are never seen again, which is typical. We have Seldra, obviously, in Helm's Hold. I mean, that's somewhat less of an Easter egg because, you know, it's much more likely that people will have played the previous version or had a DM who is at least familiar with the previous mm-hmm. version.
That went over really well with my players, by the way. There's a couple of returning characters, like the same character from that adventure, and you know, when they're checking out the prisoners to see who it is, like, oh, you see one very familiar face in there, and they're like, whoa, that's what happened to her! Holy crap! So it worked out well.
What sort of relationship did they have with her? Was it positive? Was it antagonistic?
No, antagonistic.
Awesome.
Indeed.
Yeah. Things like that come from, you know, playing like Dragon Age or Mass Effect, where a character shows up in one game and, you know, they have some weird fate, but they don't die in the first game. And then you meet up with them again in the second game, and they're like, oh, I remember you. Or if you never encountered them, they're like a totally new person. Right. So right. That was just kind of the idea. Another of the patients is Wrath, who's a character from Downshadow, my novel Downshadow. The dwarf.
The dwarf assassin.
That's right.
I didn't even put two and two together on that.
Yep. Several of the, I think they were just like exaggerated tall tale stories at the beginning, were references to other happenings or to different novels in the realms. Zan, and not that anyone would know this, Zan is named after a very good friend of mine who's also named Zan. Well, that's, I mean, his nickname. Which
does
I thought
he have
was
a twin sister?
Kind of fun. He does not, to my knowledge.
Had to ask.
Someone was asking me about one of the tavern tales. If anyone's looking at the book, it's on page 9, in which it mentions War Chief Fency in the River District. And people are like, who's War Chief Fency? There's no War Chief Fency. Are you talking about War Chief Fancy? And I'm like, yes, because the halfling just makes that mistake. Because all orcs look alike and their names sound similar.
That's great.
So, and that totally made it through editing. It's great. I was halfway expecting an editor to pick up on that and say, oh man, he got his own name wrong. What a jerk. And then fix it. But no, it made it through. And I was like, yes.
Nice.
And, tavern tale number 8, which is just under that, says Luskin was recently quarantined to contain a plague that drives people mad, causing them to kill one another before being consumed from within by demonic insects. And you read that and you're like, wow, that's ridiculous. That couldn't possibly be the case. But of course, that's what happens in my novel Shadowbane.
Right. That's part of the abyssal plague thing, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So things like that. Just kind of like the small references that just kind of happen off to the side. And people could go, oh, that's neat. I wonder what that is. Unless they've recently read that novel, in which case they're like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
So.
And then you've got the enormous white dragon statue.
Oh, yes. The enormous white dragon statue. Which I think Lord Neverember is carving into his throne or something. I thought that was very appropriate for what Neverember would do.
Indeed. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, so that's the Easter egg thing.
Yep, it happens.
So I just want to jump in while we were talking about forums here. You know, Eric, I just want to extend a big thank you as someone who's on those forums very regularly and who has been for most seasons of D&D Encounters. Some of the authors are very active. Some are less active. Some provide great feedback, and some just go, hey, yeah, whatever. Your presence on the forums has definitely been helpful. I know that you've been on them pretty regularly, and your responses have almost always been very quick. And I find that, especially on the Wednesday when I'm about to run it, I always make a point of going to the forums 2 or 3 times that day, and there's almost always something there that either clears up some confusion or presents me with an alternate suggestion, whether it's something someone else has suggested and you've then commented on, or whether it's something you've suggested yourself. I just want to say thanks for being involved. I can't imagine there was any actual requirement for you to do so, but I know the people who visit the forums can appreciate it greatly, me included. So I again want to say thanks for that.
Hear, hear.
Well, I'm very glad that it's been helpful to you guys.
Tremendously so. If nothing else, it certainly sets a good example so that next season, when we get an author who hasn't written one of these and run one of these in a while, we can hopefully lean on him a little bit if he's reluctant and go, well, come on, you know, Eric was on the forums all the time, man. He's making you look bad. Come on.
Exactly.
Come on.
Yeah, that'd be great. And it's not like Wizards has told me to do this or that they've even encouraged me to do this, although I think they're quite happy that I do it. It's just entirely my own motivation. I'm like, I can't not be interested in how people are doing in my adventure that I wrote. This is one of the most fun things for me, is interacting with people who are actually playing what I wrote, or reading a novel that I wrote. And I just like to hear the various feedback. And while we're on that topic, let me extend a apology to all DMs whose encounter I might have messed up at the very end, because there's this option in the adventure where if Karis goes down before Vargas, he gets really, really upset and breaks his staff, which is clearly a retributive strike, right, from earlier editions of the game. And it causes this huge, massive explosion, hurts a lot of people. And then the text says, and for the rest of the encounter, his defenses are lowered, but he does more damage with his attacks. And he cannot use his lightning spear, which makes sense because his lightning spear is gone, right? He destroyed it, so he can't use it, obviously. The problem is the stat block, his lightning spear is his only at-will power. So once he breaks his staff, which you can imagine is late in the combat, after he's used his recharge and encounter powers, he's essentially really angry but can't do anything.
Menacing looks.
That's right. So, and I think the way this happened is that the stat block development was not really in my hands. I found a creature that matched my conception, and I reskinned it to be Vargas, okay? And I sent that to development and said, do what you will with it. But I don't think they were necessarily looking at the text that says he loses this ability. So I think they just said, oh, he has two abilities. One is melee and one is range, so let's just make him one ability for, you know, ease of use, because that's what it is in the book. So I think that was just a slight wobble in the stat block creation there. But generally, if anyone else is still going to run the game, or you're going to use it in a campaign later, and that happens, just say that he can still use the power, just he can't use it with his spear. So it doesn't still have range. It's like a shocking grasp that he has. So that's my suggestion.
Actually, I appreciate that. I was reading you had posted something along those lines on the forums today, so I was able to make the necessary adjustments. Thanks for that. However, we played it earlier before I had read that feedback, and the DM that was at our table actually misunderstood how the power worked. And when he saw that it had ranged and melee, he understood that to mean that Vargas could make a ranged and a melee attack every round as an at will, and did so right from the beginning at the top of
rough.
The initiative order. Wow. Which is part of the reason we suffered a TPK, was every round Vargas was doing two massive attacks and just demolishing us.
That's I don't mean to offend anyone, but that's awesome.
So anyway, live and learn, or in this case, die and learn.
That reminds me of my worst typo from the first season, where the Myconids just had this stunning attack that was an at will. Boom, stun. Boom, stun. And that's supposed to be an encounter power. Whoops. Anyway.
Makes it fun for the DM, though.
Yes.
I knew there was another layer of salt somewhere.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, a layer of salt. let me tell this story. It has nothing to do with anything. Well, it's the layer of salt that was tied into Neverwinter. I think it was the first one. It was the
Mordaeville.
The Forge the Dawn Titan.
That's the one. And at the time, there was all this talk online about how it was so hard and everybody kept having these TPKs. And a friend of mine who was just a mechanical number crunching power gamer maniac took this as a challenge and said, hey, you know, I think I can design a party that could just smoke this. So, or rather, I think what he said was, I could design a party that'll have a pretty good chance. So he designed this party where we just wandered through We didn't even use all our dailies, and we just killed everything without one of us even going down. And I think the only – well, of course, there was a warlock of the White Well or something who was doing like 40 damage with all of his attacks. And there was my character who was a barbarian. I'm forgetting exactly what kind of guy he was, but he was a barbarian healer of some kind. Oh, barbarian rune priest. That's the one. Where I would just start every round and give people 12 temporary hit points, and then I would hit somebody and heal somebody without actually using any powers. So, yeah, it was pretty amazing the things that you can do with this system. And the GM at the end of that was like, I have run this for 8 groups so far, and I've killed all of them. And now I have to go home and become a better DM.
Oh, that's great.
Anyway.
Oh, my.
Okay, I have to follow up on that story then. The party that was created to beat the adventure, had they run it or played it before? Like, did these players have foreknowledge of any of the details? Because that obviously makes a huge difference.
No, we did not. We were able to compensate with a lot of things that were going on. I think we had the sense that fire resistance was helpful.
Yeah.
So I think like 3 of the people had natural fire resistance, and everyone else got it from a leader spell that one of us did.
Nice.
So, yeah. I mean, some of us were a little bit down in hit points, but we still managed it.
That sounds awesome. Now I want to go back and play it again.
Yeah, so do I. No party has beat me yet.
You've only run one.
No, well, yeah, one Lair Assault, but I ran it like 4 or 5 times. Okay. With the same party, and they still couldn't beat me.
Getting a little off topic.
So while we're off topic, again, this has nothing to do with anything, but at my home table, because I think before we started recording, you were talking about me doing gaming outside. I used to do this thing called the God Slayers. And the concept behind this is that people build 30th level characters, because no one is ever going to get to 30th level, right? You just have to be playing forever to get to 30th level. But I just had people build a party of 30th level characters, and then I'd throw one of these huge epic threats at them. The first one was Orcus. Right? Orcus plus several Garistro sort of demon things.
Now to clarify, is it old Orcus or new Orcus?
Yeah,
it was Orcus empowered from the Death Reborn or
okay.
whatever the yeah.
Death's Reach or whatever.
Prince of Undeath. Prince yeah. of Undeath.
Yeah, he's there a lot tougher in that one.
Yes. Yeah, they took him down in 2.5 rounds, I think.
What?
It was pretty remarkable. So my next time that I did the Godslayers game, I threw them up against Demogorgon and Dagon at the same time. Right? So there were 2 33, 34th level solos on the board at the same time, and a series of like 30th level minion demons. And they beat that in 4 rounds. And
now, of course, these rounds probably took like 45 minutes each, right?
Oh, God. The Orcus battle was 4.5 hours.
Wow.
The Demogorgon Dagon battle was 6 hours. And then the next time I said, okay, I'm going to win this time. So I created an empowered version of a Shardalon. Okay. So I upped him to a 35th level solo and I put him on the board. I used the Colossal Red Dragon for him, obviously.
Indeed.
And I put him on a board, which is basically an erupting volcano. So the tiles would keep filling up with lava as the battle progressed. Okay. And Ashardalon had lava walk. So whatever. And everyone's like, that's not a thing. And I'm like, it is if I'm the DM. And so there was him. And then he had 4 Baelor Sword Mages who were up to being 30th level elites. And they fought that thing for 8 hours and managed to bloody it. I didn't take down any PCs. I put one down briefly, one time, but he popped right back up more powerful than ever before. It's like a Jedi thing. I don't know. And they fought it for 8 hours. They bloodied the dragon. And then it burst and it did its huge blast all over the field. And then I looked at my watch and I said, you know what, guys, I'm done. Never finished that particular battle. So,
wrote this stuff down and can share it with us, because these.
Yes, I can share with you. I can share with you my Empower Nishardalon if you want to. And I was building a fourth Godslayers game, which never actually happened because I was so disgusted with how powerful these characters could be. My fourth Godslayer enemy was going to be the Raven Queen.
Oh, very cool.
So I'm like, you know, you're called the Godslayers. I'm going to send you against an actual god and see how it does. And I think she's a 38th level solo. Anyway, but yeah, so that's how it worked. And it was pretty fun. Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Wow.
May need a couple Although days for that one.
Yeah, I hear that in D&D Next, the math is flat, though.
See?
Doesn't scale quite the same way.
No, but I'm sure the monsters will be just as powerful, and they're demon princes after all, right?
That's right. Anyway, it'll be fun. We'll see how it goes.
So, Eric, quick question. Just, I guess, since we're on this topic, and it kind of comes back to a little bit to Storm and Neverwinter, you told me earlier that you haven't had a chance to play at this session, right? But during the week or during the month, how often do you actually play D&D? Or D&D or any kind of role-playing game, let's say.
Let's see. Two or three times a month, really. I mostly play other games at the moment. I was in a long-standing 4th edition game, which just finished up about a month ago, that met every 2 weeks. And I'm running a Forgotten Realms 4th edition game. Characters are currently 16th level, which meets... periodically. It meets whenever I, you know, am not busy and feel the inclination. So that averages to about once a month. And my other games, I do game, but I don't play D&D all the time. I'm in a Monday game that meets every 2 weeks with a bunch of fellow designers in the area. And we are currently, we cycle through different games. We are currently playing Shadowrun. With the current, I think it's 4th edition rules, but the old, I think it's 2050, canon.
Yeah.
It's interesting. We're having a good time. I blew up a speeding car with my shotgun. It was awesome. And, I also run a campaign which is based on, well, it uses the Marvel Heroic role-playing system that Margaret Weiss recently had and then lost the license to, so it was discontinued. But I had bought all the books, and I'm running a campaign based on the Academy X concept. So it's a bunch of kids who are all young mutants at the Xavier Academy, and of course, bad things happen to them. So that's pretty fun. I'm having a good time with that one. And My old D&D game has turned into an Iron Kingdoms game, which is also pretty fun. So, yeah, that's where I am. I do less gaming than I used to. I used to play D&D a couple times every week, but I've recently become very busy doing the writing and designing thing. So,
right.
Nice. Something we can all aspire to.
Yeah, it's fun. Just keep practicing and keep submitting stuff. I mean, Wizards is open to submissions and other companies. If you know other systems, then try your hand at those things. Go to conventions, meet designers, learn what people are looking for. That's how it happens. There's nothing real magical about it. Well, I mean, except doing it. That's pretty magical.
Speaking of Gen Con this year, I think all three of us are going to the Candlekeep next thing this year.
Yeah, awesome. That's right. Yep. Yeah, I totally signed up on that based on Eric
recommendation.
Your high recommendation for it.
Yeah, it should be good. It might be me doing stand up for a couple hours, but it'll be good.
Tell them about the Godslayer game. You'll win over the whole crowd. I
guess. Yeah, very true. Yeah.
And maybe then have copies for sale, and you'll make a bundle.
As you're saying it, I was thinking, like, this is a great idea. I'm going to have to think something like that up. That would be, like, a great sort of, like, one-off...
Kickstarter.
Yeah, there you go.
The God Slayers Kickstarter game. Should wait until... Should wait until Wizards of the Coast discontinues 4th edition, right? When they move all the way to D&D Next, and they're like, okay, you know... People do whatever you want with 4th edition. I will immediately start my God Slayers Kickstarter. And I'm like, boom, here you go. Here's a book of ridiculous encounters. See if you can kill your PCs.
How do I sign up?
The spiritual successor to the Lair Assault.
Well, this reminds me, actually, the whole God Slayer talk, it reminds me of D&D Championship last year, Derek.
Oh, yeah. God, it was so hard.
Oh, jeez.
We ended up coming in third place, and believe me, I was happy to finish in third after I saw how hard it was. It was a ton of fun, though. It's crazy nice. Fun. And yeah, it was epic level, and yeah. Anyway, that's a whole story for another time.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, it just reminded me when you said God Slayer, I'm like throwing these impossible things at you, and I'm like, yeah, been there, got slayed. but anyway.
Fun. Well, I think that's everything for me. Danny, you guys have anything else for Eric?
No, I guess you haven't gotten... we've only talked, 4 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, and so nothing new on the front, eh? Gen Con, you are going to Gen Con. Are you doing anything apart from Candlekeep?
You know, I'm just attending as a civilian. I'm not really officially in any particular events, so...
But we could use a guy for our championship team. If you're free at that slot, you can sign up.
Well, maybe. Send me some information. My email, and for those of you who would like to email me to tell me how much you like my stuff or yell at me about something that I did, is ericscottdeby.com or ericscottdeby@yahoo.com. There you go. So, yeah.
Excellent.
Let me know.
Well, we'll plug it away anyway on the website and such. Yeah, Craig, any questions?
Again, going back to the God Slayer, I'd very much like to see a Loth, a very nice Loth encounter.
Yeah, that's sort of supposed to be the goal of my Forgotten Realms game. We'll see how it goes.
Indeed.
Nice. This is tied into the story of several of the characters. And also because one of my players is like, you are never using Loth against us ever. Please swear it now. I'm like, really?
I've got a picture that you
gave
use
me a great
token.
Idea. Cool.
Yeah, I've got that picture from the nice Loth statue at Gen Con last year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
That was amazing. But yeah, anyway, I guess that concludes everything. You, Craig, you have nothing else?
Nope. I mean, other than to say that I quite enjoyed this encounter, this last encounter, and the this season. I really liked the sort of chase aspect to the last few encounters. So thank you very much for another great Neverwinter adventure.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Derek?
No, I'm good. I've asked everything I can think of at this point, and I'm going to release it to the blog tomorrow just to get people's feedback. And Eric, at the end of every season of D&D Encounters, during the week zero week, since we don't actually play, I usually do a report card of the season where we sort of weigh in with what we liked, what we didn't like. I encourage you to check it out next week and don't take anything too personally. I don't have too many bad things to say, but a lot of praise.
Well, I'm a professional writer and designer. I never take things too personally. I mean, not in public. I go home and cry. It's totally fine.
Sorry.
I say what I have to say on my podcast, and we go from there. But once again, Eric, thank you very much for a great season. First four, I was kind of like, okay, where is this going? And the last four, you know, after having read the last four, I was like, yeah, this is going somewhere good. I love Helm's Hold, and you've got me totally spun on Neverwinter now. I've been going through the campaign guide. I'm going back to all the novels that mention Neverwinter, and I'm like, I'm held to Neverwinter now from this season.
Great atmosphere in the season.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I hope to do this again sometime. We'll have Neverwinter Part 3.
Neverwinter Part 3, and if you want, you can maybe next season, if you decide that you're going to play at some point, you can come on and tell us how you're liking a season from a different author or not.
Yeah. Yeah. If I have time. It would definitely be a cool thing to check out.
We'll stay in touch anyway.
Absolutely.
But, excellent. So do you have anything else to add, Eric?
No, I think I'm good. Thanks for the talk. It was a good one.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for having us for being with us. And we love having you. Yeah, so good luck with your future endeavors, and hopefully we will have a part 3 to this Neverwinter Saga D&D Encounters.
Awesome.
Excellent. This concludes D&D Encounters special podcast with Eric Scott DeBee on final closing comments in Storm of Neverwinter. Please join us next week as we speak about Session 1 of Search for the Diamond Staff, Season 14 of D&D Encounters. Until next time, have a blast.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Amaron_DM, and be sure to visit DungeonsMaster.com for original D&D 4th edition material, including a weekly field report of my D&D Encounters experiences.
And follow me on Twitter at 20Foot and visit 20FootRadius.blogspot.com for your weekly dose of D&D Encounters. That's 20FootRadius, 20FT, radius.blogspot.com. Until then, have a blast.